This is a tape on Christensen's at New Hazleton, October 24, 1990. Anyway, your parents, I guess, moved here a long time ago. They came here just years and years. In fact, they were here when David's came.
Yeah, they were here before David, so yeah.
So where did your parents...
I think they came here 1925.
And from where?
Well, at that time he came directly from Sweden to here.
Really? Really? Yes. So, how come they chose Hazleton, or would you know?
Well, because of Olof Hansen, connected with Hansen Lumber and Timber Company.
Oh, I see. And
see, they knew one another from the old country.
Oh, and Hansen was in business here.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. So what kind of business did Hansen have?
Well, pole and lumber.
Pole and lumber.
Cedar pole and lumber.
I see. So they knew each other from Sweden.
Well, they were fourth.
Fourth
third
cousin.
Cousins.
Third cousins.
Isn't that something? So then your father was in the logging or the pole business.
Right. He worked for Hansen's.
Oh yeah. Oh, my, that must have been interesting. So what did they, that's in the days when they used to select the poles just here and there? Oh, naturally they'd have their...
Well, it was mainly up in the Kispjox area they had pole camps, eh?
Isn't that interesting? So pole camp would consist of, what did they do? They would have...
It was all horse logging, you know. It was all...
So they'd have horses and they'd have a bunkhouse, I suppose.
Right, and cookhouse.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see, so there would be several people.
True. They'd have small camps.
Oh, yeah. So then as soon as they got a load of logs, then they got a truck, I suppose. Or did they have their own truck? They probably had their own truck.
Well, them days there was no trucking. As far as I remember, they were... It was mainly winter work, and they decked them up on skidways and hauled them out on sleighs with horses.
Isn't that something?
Some they floated down the rivers in the spring.
Yeah, I heard that, yeah. Hauled them out with horses. Isn't that something? Yeah, well, yes, because I heard that it'd be the same as the Love Brothers. They would be doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Depending where they logged, I guess. If they were near the river, that's where they went.
Yeah.
So he did that for quite a few years.
Oh. Quite a few years,
10 years maybe anyway, eh? Because after that he built the hotel.
Well, no, you see, it was in 1929 he first went into the hotel business.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He
bought out what they called Sinkville's Hotel. Senkpiel.
Senkpiel.
His name was Sam Sinkville.
Oh, for goodness sakes. Sinkville. So he bought him out.
Right.
And then...
He continued in the hotel business from then on.
So that would be, they would have rooms and they had, but mostly the fact that they served beer and stuff.
They had rooms and beer.
And then, that would be before the bus. That would be before the bus.
There was no route.
No route.
There was no road past Skeena Crossing, actually.
Yeah. So the business in those days would be all construction guys all over the place, I suppose.
Oh, loggers and miners. It was a mine too, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Right. And of course it was, and it was more or less of the same place. The hotel was pretty well the same place as it is now?
No, it was on, it was located where Sears building is.
Oh, I see.
On 11th Avenue.
Oh, for goodness sake. So then,
that hotel burnt down in 1933.
33. 33. Oh my. Oh, that was did those people, did people have insurance in those days?
There was a little bit of insurance, but not very much.
So then he built where you were.
In the spring of 34, he rebuilt the hotel.
In the same place.
In the same place. Oh. Oh my goodness. So then, how many were there in your family, Chris? No, Carl.
Just me and my brother, Ingmar.
How do you spell his name?
I-N-G-M-A-R.
Ingmar and Carl. So who was the older one?
I'm the oldest.
You're the oldest.
He was born in Hazleton. I was born in the old country.
Really? Oh, for goodness sake. So what age were you when you came?
3 years old.
Oh, well. So you were just a little guy.
Yeah.
So the two of you, of course, grew up in Hazleton.
True.
So then you would go to school here, of course, in the little one-room school, I guess, in Newtown.
Right, New Hazleton.
New Hazleton.
Up to grade 8.
To grade 8. And I guess in those days, I guess they had a high school by that time, didn't they?
Yeah, there was.
But you had to board out.
You had to go down to Old Town.
Yeah. But
to go to any further grades than that, I don't think there was. I think grade 10 was the top.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
9 and 10.
So, did you go to high school too? Or?
No.
Uh-huh. So then what did you do as soon as you stopped school?
Well, then I carried on in the cedar pole camps too.
Well, that's where that was the main income of the people in those days, or at least the loggers.
Yeah, Louis Merrow had a camp up at Beaumont.
Louis Merrow at Beaumont, where's that?
That's across the river. East of New Hazleton, about at Mud Creek.
Oh, Mud Creek. Oh, yeah. So that's
no,
where you.
No, Beaumont's Pottery Creek, Carl.
Well, it was.
Well, it's near
actually
that.
Near Mud Creek.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where you work then.
Yeah.
I guess Louis, you must have enjoyed Louis. Was he a good man to work with?
Oh, fantastic guy. He was. Yeah.
So that went on for a few years.
Oh, that went on to several years, and finally, I got on with Hanson Lumber and Timber Company as a pole inspector, and I used to work from Morristown to Kitwangaw.
God, Morristown to Kitwangaw.
Loading poles in the summertime.
My goodness, that would be on the train.
They used to take these poles out in the wintertime and deck them along the railroad tracks wherever there was a spur. And after the poles got seasoned, so to speak, dried out a bit, then we loaded them on flat cars.
Oh, yeah.
For export to the... Most of them all were shipped to the States.
Is that right? So then your travel would be by car, was it?
Yeah.
Well, that must have been interesting.
Yeah, it was a small crew. And
You had a crew. You had a crew for this inspection?
Yeah, about six-man crew.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. So, and your job was loading the poles.
Right.
So you not only inspected them, you also loaded them.
Also loaded them, yeah.
So then you would, and then you would bring them to the railroad?
No, they were already, they were hauled in, you see, from these various camps to the railroad site during the winter.
Oh, yeah. I see. And then you would be, you'd be loading them into the flat cars.
Onto the flat cars.
So you'd be checking them and marking them or whatever. And
yeah, grading them.
Grading them, yeah. And then, of course, that's when the guys got paid, I suppose. Or when did the guys...
Well, that would be when they got the final settlement, yeah.
Oh, yeah, graded and loaded. Oh, for goodness sake. So then, final settlement is when they finally would get sold.
Right on.
So in other words, it's just like the grain farmer. You had to wait till he cut the grain. So that must have been, it must have been very interesting. Any particular incidents where it was unusual, or where you had any troubles or anything like that?
Not really.
It was just straightforward, I guess.
Them days there was no labor hassles. You either worked for the wages they gave you, or you didn't work. There was always somebody else to take your job.
So they were just glad to get graded and get their money. And then, so you went, did that for several years, I guess, eh?
Right.
Well, that must have been really interesting. That you would certainly get to know many workers, many, I guess, camps, eh? Or many bosses, I guess, or not bosses, but operators. They would go by, I guess, same as they do now. They would all have their own number or name or whatever.
Right. There was many, many pole, small pole gypples, we called them, you know. They'd
gypples.
So gypples would be contractors, actually. It's the right name for them.
Gypo, that's G-Y-P-O, I guess so. Yeah, well, they were just all over the country.
Right, small camps all over the country.
Because there was a sawdust in our little place.
Even the natives, you know, they had pole camps up the Kispioks and Morristown.
My goodness. Well, that was actually, you might say, the mainstay. That would be like after, because I guess by now there was no mining and the railroad was built. And the telegraph line was shut down. So that was the mainstay of the economy, wasn't it?
It was at that time. Very much so.
So that would go on almost to the Second World War, or not really. Or would it go to 1939?
Yeah. What continued through the war years?
It did, eh? Oh, yeah. Mm. Is that? Oh, because they really needed, eh? The World War II as well. Oh, goodness. So you were, you know, you must have been on that job for a long, long time. But
well, it was up until more or less 1948.
Really? Isn't that interesting?
1948.
And that's when that's when the camp started changing, I guess. They were going to kind of bought out by bigger outfits or something?
Well, no. At that time, I decided to go into
the hotel business.
Partnership with my father in the hotel business.
Oh, yeah. Well, isn't that interesting? So to stay put. Of course, by this time, I suppose, Ethel was in the picture, or I suppose.
Yeah, Ethel was.
Well, we had two children on that.
Oh my gosh. So what? So what year did you people get married?
43.
Oh yeah. My goodness.
Married in 1943. Yep.
So where did you find Ethel?
Rentz Memorial Hospital.
Really? Oh, you were a nurse.
No, she was a second cook down there, I guess.
It's right. Isn't that interesting? Oh, isn't that nice? So of course it stands to reason that you wanted, because as a inspector you're on the road all the time, and this way you would be more or less at home, more at the hotel, you'd be more at home. Would that be, that'd be one of the reasons? Well, I guess, just the same as people make decisions, that's your decision, do something different.
Well, in 1948, it wasn't that big a hotel, but it only had 6 rooms and a bar. And then we expanded it in 1952 to its present size.
Oh, I see.
It's called the New Hazleton Hotel.
Oh, yeah. So that's where you're... I suppose you would invest some money into that as a partner.
Well, we added on quite an addition there, total of 16 rooms.
Oh, really?
And mainly because it looked like the mining activity in the area was going to flourish.
Oh, yeah.
Silver Standard was Silver Standard mine was being developed, as well as Russia de Bull mine.
And that Silver Standard was silver, and Russia de Bull was
copper and tungsten, I think.
Copper
it was.
And tungsten. Yeah. And then did that pan out? Did they?
Well, the Silver Standard mine flourished for several years, which helped the local economy a great deal.
And did the Roche one too? Or did that?
I was trying to remember it. It started up, but it didn't last long.
Oh, yeah.
The
Red Rose
was all that it
was.
Well, Red Rose, 1957 was what?
Well, I think... Stop.
Okay. During the World War II, you lived on Red Rose Mine.
Right, I built a house up there.
Is that right?
I worked up there for the summer of 43, driving truck, hauling ore from the mill down to Skeena Crossing.
My goodness. But they also had some kind of a... They also had some kind of a...
Tramline.
Tramline.
That was on the Russia de Bull mine.
Oh.
Different mine.
Oh, I see.
That was in the early years.
Oh, I see.
When it was first opened up.
Oh, yeah. Because I have a story about that to tell you one day.
They have the tram line all the way from the top of the mountain on Russia de Bull mine down to the railroad.
Yeah. That's the one that I have a story.
At Carnaby.
Yeah. So isn't that... But what kind of mining was it, Red Rose?
Oh, that was a tungsten mine.
Tungsten. Mm. So of course, if that was during the World War II, then of course they were using it for whatever they were using it for the war.
Oh yeah, they needed that very. That was a precious metal during the war.
Yeah.
The story was that I heard that if it wasn't for Red Rose Mine, maybe they would have lost the war,
really?
Because they couldn't get this they had the market overseas, and it was cut off for this tungsten.
Because they also got some at Stewart, too. So out of Stewart, there's a mine that my, or at least the states, mined tungsten there, too. Some small operation during the war. During the war.
Yeah.
So I guess wherever they could find, wherever they could find it, they would grab it, I guess.
That could be.
Isn't that interesting? So that was
that mine, though, closed down in the fall of 1943.
Okay.
Yeah, it did then. And it reopened again.
Because they could get this tungsten then from some other place much cheaper than they could mine it in the hard rock.
Oh, yeah. Well, anyhow, maybe they had enough by that time or something, who knows. Or as you say, maybe. Yeah. So then it was after that you went into the hotel business.
Yeah, well, I came back in 43 and then I went back to work for Hansen again.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's
48.
And then up until 1948.
And then it ran into the hotel business. So then, so how long were you in business with your father?
Well, then I...
You built this big hotel and all the... I guess...
Then, in 1956, I bought out my dad's interest fully. 1956.
Mm-hmm. What was your father's name?
Gust. G-U-S-T.
Oh, I see. Well, and then, of course, so your father more or less retired. They're both alive
still? Yeah, he wanted to retire at that time.
Well, mother was gone.
Both of them are dead.
But I mean, 1956, they were still, they were both, yeah. So so then they just simply retired.
They're semi-retired.
Sort of came and
didn't want to be
in charge.
So active in it.
And so then you got took over completely then. So that was...
Then Ethel and I stayed in the hotel and operated it for many years afterwards.
Yeah.
Selling out in 1971.
My goodness. Yeah, I know. So that was your home. You stayed right in the hotel and the kids.
Raised the kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, we then in 71 we semi-retired.
It's when you sold out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then. Your children, let's see, that you have what's her name?
Ida.
Yeah. Ida, that's what she was your oldest, was she?
Yeah, she's the oldest.
Oldest. And
Ida Mold refers
Ida Mold.
To us now.
Yeah. And
Roy.
And Roy. Okay. Well, Roy, is he here in town?
Yes.
In South Town?
Oh, in South Town. Oh, mm-hmm. Oh, I see.
Oh, they're both still in the area. They never moved away.
Isn't that? So I guess you had the usual experiences of raising kids. I guess they just went to school like everybody else.
Oh, yeah.
So I know that, well then of course the bus came through. You did have the bus service once the...
Yeah, we were bus eight. They called it the Prince Coach Lines bus started up.
I can't remember when that was.
You mean it was just meant to Prince Rupert or
Prince George, the Prince Rupert?
Yeah, yeah, because I know...
Started up in the... I think in the 60s.
Yeah, well, I know that I used to go and collect stuff off the bus mm-hmm. occasionally. It wasn't mm-hmm. very often.
Right, so we were bus agent there at the hotel.
And and you also did some guiding. Didn't you do some guiding or a little bit of hunting?
One call with the Love Brothers there, one month or something.
Oh.
Nothing to speak of. That was just...
Well, I guess maybe because I used to see all these pictures in your office. I guess they were just your guests maybe went and fished or did hunting or something.
Yeah, that was me, yeah.
That was just to fill in for somebody else.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that the hotel would keep you very busy anyway. But, I remember seeing all these pictures in your hotel, and they were pictures of, I guess, your guests would have been
fishing. See, 1940, we were in the hotel business actually straight through from 1948 to 71.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah. God, that's
24 years and 8 months.
Oh, God.
I had it on my mind 24 years and 9 months.
So you must have had some interesting experiences.
Oh, many, many.
Okay, met people from every place, I guess, eh? Were they just...
Well, them days, too, must remember... Once travelers leaving Prince George and they get by Smithers, well, the next hotel to accommodate anybody would be really Terrace.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We were right on the highway.
Oh, so you had all kinds of tourists, like you might say.
Yeah.
So that's really what it was, that you just had a lot of tourists come and stay.
Yeah, and everybody in them days, of course, traveled at a slower pace.
Oh, yeah.
Because the roads were not paved.
Yeah.
It was a day's drive, you know, from Prince George to Hazleton.
Oh, sure it was, yeah.
And we had good accommodation.
And then did you serve meals, too?
Well, it was a cafe in connection with the hotel.
Oh, there was a cafe, too.
So
So Ethel did a lot of cooking then?
No, we leased that out.
Oh, I see. So it was sort of part of the hotel?
Yeah.
Oh, that would be handy. So in other words, you gave the full service to the tourists, because from
true.
Accommodation to their food and to their drink and all that stuff.
And the rooms, yeah.
And the rooms.
Yeah.
Any unusual people that you remember?
Oh, not really. I've forgot so many names. It's.
But even just like... not even just by name necessarily, but no unusual incidents that you recall. Or people from any particular special places. So, Ida and Roy, did they go to high school too?
Not Roy, but
yeah.
Ida.
He took grade 9 down there. He took grade 9 in Old Hazleton.
And
Ida went through grade 10, wasn't it?
Grade 11.
Okay.
She took her 12
afterwards. Oh, yeah. And so, and as you say, they both live here now. So, of course, Ida married...
Brian Mould.
And she has, so they have, she has how many children?
Yeah, they had two children.
Two children.
Tammy.
Tammy.
Well, Rob is the oldest.
And Rob. And Roy is married, of course.
Yeah, married the Flynn girl.
Oh, yeah. Shirley Flynn. And how many children do they have?
They just have the one, Joni.
Joan.
J-O-N-I.
J-O-N-I. Oh, I see, Joni. So she must be...
8 years old.
Oh, she's 8 years old. I see.
She'll be 9 in the spring.
And Robbie's the one. How is Robbie doing?
Pretty good.
Is he in town now?
He's Vancouver, taking an auto body course.
Oh, good.
Apprenticing.
Oh, I should say, yeah.
Well, isn't that nice? So then the two of you in your semi-retirement, as you say, enjoy a lot of outdoors.
Right. We enjoy a lot of outdoors.
So you walk
Mainly hiking up the mountains.
So you've been up that mountain many, many, many times.
Exploring other places, taking photographs, mountain and mainly animals.
Animals in the, try to get them in their own natural habitat.
Isn't that nice? So you must have many, many albums of pictures. And of course enjoying your grandchildren. Yeah, you also, you plant a garden too, don't you?
Oh, garden every year.
Yeah. And so what is your advice to the young generation? Well, responsibility and there are too many gadgets, eh? Well, TV and all this stuff they stick in their ears. We don't have singing, we don't have storytelling like we used to.
You see, they got into this two-cycle age too, you know, and just because their neighbors got a trail bike for their kids, well, everybody else wants a trail bike, and now it's just gone from trail bikes to small four-wheel drives, and well, fine if you can afford it and enjoy it, I guess. But work is getting out and working.
Yeah, well, it's funny, you know, like
humanity,
if it doesn't have work at the end of it, humanity disintegrates, like not disintegrates, but deteriorates.
Mm-hmm.
Deteriorates, because if you can't work sincerely for part of your life, you know, if you just fiddle instead of working really, then of course your purpose gets lost, you know.
Yeah, and there's not enough of discipline among them. You know, the children are not disciplined at home like they used to be, and they get no discipline at school.
No. But
well, you look back on the two society, whole of society has changed that way. They're whole of some society now are demanding too much.
They're demanding too much, and then there's,
and they always expect the government to hand out for this and hand out for that, and it doesn't seem to help the whole thing at all.
No. Anyway, of just before I forget it, of all your little experiences, which were many, which would you say you enjoyed the most, or which part of your work or life or whatever did you enjoy the best, outside of all the nice things you do now?
Well, we certainly enjoyed that hotel business, you know. We wouldn't have stayed there 25 years unless we enjoyed it.
And that's because you enjoy people.
It was always meeting people, and you hear all their problems, and you hear all the good things too.
Yeah, yeah.
Not just only the bad things.
Yeah, yeah.
And you always learn, you know, by meeting other people. It's a learning experience.
It is, it really is. And you find that other people's problems are often similar to your own.
Well, you learn how to, it's a real education, meeting lots of new people.
It is an education.
People from all walks of life.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, you know, in a hotel business you meet all walks of life.
Yeah.
You meet, you know.
You meet from the common worker to the doctors and lawyers and.
Yeah, to the high profile ones.
The high profile, yeah.
Yeah.
And like I tell the people, even at my camp, the people basically are all the same. They all have to work for a living, and they all look for that cup of joy called holiday. And that's interesting. So anyway,
good enough.
Olive
Austin Goodenough was Hanson's Lumber and Timber Company superintendent.
Oh yeah, Austin Goodenough. And how in the world do you spell that?
G-O-O-D-I-N-O-U-G-H.
Good enough.
Good enough. It was.
He always says, "I'm not Mr. Too Good. I'm just good enough."
Isn't that nice? And he was the what kind of superintendent?
Yeah, he was superintendent for Hanson Lumber and Timber Company.
For Hanson Lumber and Timber Company, and I guess he was pretty special, eh?
Well, yeah, he didn't think. Yes, he was a married man, but he didn't have no family, and he worked hard. He was on the go 7 days a week. He never took no annual holidays.
Well, like, was he working just at this one place, or did he have to go all over the...
No, he managed the whole thing for Hanson.
So how far did their work stretch?
Well, Hanson, as far as I know, they stretched from... about Topley to Terrace.
Oh my goodness. So they had pole mills out?
Well, they had ties coming out of Topley area.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Yeah, they used to make ties in Indaco area.
Indaco too, yeah.
Was on the
oh my.
Indaco, yeah, I should say Indaco to Terrace.
To Terrace, for goodness sake. And so this, as a superintendent, then you had to go and check out all these things, see that they were all working right. And so there were crews all over the, and there'd be pole yards all over the place.
Right.
So this one was just one of them.
This was just one of them.
Oh my, that was a huge business.
Yeah.
So that was Olaf Hanson. No, that would you say?
They had a pole.
What was the owner of it?
Olaf Hanson was the owner.
Austin Goodenough was the superintendent.
He was the superintendent. My goodness. Wow. And in those days, the travel was all much. Still, I guess automobile too. Did they have automobiles already?
Yes, there was automobiles then. But you had to catch the train from New Hazleton to go to Terrace.
Oh, yeah. And then and all the logging was done by horses. Talk about the trip that you went through. Did you go to Sweden?
Yeah, but little trips, we should start little back for the... In Selling Hotel, we roamed all the way from Alaska to Tijuana, Mexico, in our trips.
And that's
including we were up to Prudhoe Bay.
Prudhoe Bay, where's that?
That's on the
Arctic.
Out
of Alaska.
Prudhoe Bay out of Alaska that's the Arctic,
Beaufort Sea.
Beaufort Sea.
Oh boy.
And Tuktoyaktuk is also on the Beaufort Sea, and that's
well, you can drive to
Inuvik.
Mm-hmm. So you went with camp by your camper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Camper. It must be beautiful there in the summer, I guess.
Four-wheel drive camper. So, a lot of people have gone to Inuvik now since they completed that road in
1979.
Oh, yeah. 1980, we were up to Inuvik
and then flew into
Tuktoyaktuk. What was so outstanding about the Arctic?
About that trip?
Uh-huh.
Well... it's different country, different scenery.
Closer to the Arctic. I liked it better before you got there, because you were going through the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
No mountains up in that area.
Yeah,
mostly flat land and water.
Yeah, like this.
the last 100 miles or so before we got to Prudhoe Bay, it's no trees. It's just flat.
Barren country.
It always gives you the appearance you're, it's so flat that it gives you the appearance you're going downhill all the way.
Isn't that something?
But it's not. It's optical illusion.
And you'd be there in the summer, it'd be 24 hours daylight.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you see the sun come down shortly after midnight, touch the horizon, and go right back up again.
Isn't that something? There's lots of wildflowers and everything. Did you see caribou and everything?
Caribou, yeah. There's grizzly bears. There's quite a lot of game.
There's fox and ptarmigans and all that stuff, I guess.
Oh, yeah. And some creatures we didn't even know what they, you call them, the one or two birds there, we just never did find out what they were.
A real breeding place for birds, I guess, because there's so much daylight.
Then one summer we drove across country to Newfoundland and back.
Oh. Yeah, that was in 75, we went to Newfoundland and back.
Oh, that must have been something.
Newfoundland was very interesting. It was there's all small villages, or fishing villages around the coast. And
I understand the people are very, very,
very friendly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And rugged, I guess, living off the sea.
True. Real rugged, and most places you can't grow any gardens or anything.
It's just like being on the top of a mountain. It's kind of a mossy. The trees are all stunted and rocks protruding out of it in all directions.
So it'd be that sea air forever blowing on it.
Must be.
The salt, sea air. So did you get to New Brunswick? Is it New Brunswick that has the high tide, I think?
Yeah, that's right, too. It's the highest tide in the world at New Brunswick. Yeah, oh, yeah.
New Brunswick and Southampton have a high... that must have been interesting.
It is.
And we took in the northern part of the woman's state store. We went across the Cornwall and went into the New York, New Hampshire, New Denver, Vermont, and Maine. Drove to the top of the highest mountain on the East Coast.
And that wasn't very high.
Mount Washington,
yeah.
Oh, I see.
It wasn't very high, comparable of our standards.
And I understand all those states are really old settlements.
That's right. Good.
Because
the English lords used to have homes on the coast of Maine.
Their houses were built out of all rock and cement.
In a lot of places.
Rock work. Rock houses, it was all rock walls instead of framed walls.
Well, boy, they would last a while, eh?
Mm-hmm.
They're almost like castles.
Good.
I know
along the coast of, we went from Bar Harbor, Maine, all the way along the coast and of New Brunswick, and they have what they call the flower pots, a great big rock with trees and flowers on top of them that, they have warnings of when the tide comes in, and you have to be off of the beach when the tide comes in because it covers these just about up to the top.
There are rocks with flowers and trees.
Yeah.
So the only moisture they get is when the sea comes in.
I guess so. Well, and yet the rain on top.
And the rain, yeah, because it didn't say the salt water wouldn't be that good for them, I guess.
No.
So that, isn't that amazing? Rock flower pots.
They call them flower pots. These big rocks and their flowers and the trees on top.
And they say they also caves all over the place.
Oh yes, there's a lot of caves in there.
Caves, from that water.
Yeah, all these.
There's a certain amount along the Nova Scotia coast. They have what they call the ovens, a type of caves and different things.
My goodness.
And in 85 is when we went to Europe.
Oh, did you? And that's to Sweden did it as well.
Yeah.
Well, it took in the parts of
eight countries of Europe on a bus tour.
Oh.
And then another.
As far as Italy.
Isn't that nice? So that would be England and France and.
Well, no, the ones of Europe would be, it was Belgium and Holland and Germany and Switzerland, Austria.
Oh, yeah.
Italy, Spain, and France.
Oh, yeah.
And we used London for home base.
Oh, yeah.
Then came back to London and took a bus tour of Northern England and of Scotland.
Oh.
The highlight of the trip was going across on that, what do they call that? It wasn't a boat ferry when it goes on top of the water.
Yeah, the hovercraft.
Hovercraft, oh. Big hovercraft. It took us only 59 minutes to cross the English Channel.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that would be oh, and how many passengers?
Oh.
I don't know.
Busloads. As well as vehicles. That's
so
big.
And it floated on top.
Yep. And when it got to its base, it just went right up on the ground, on the base.
Right up on the shore.
Yep.
So see.
They've got huge propellers on it.
Oh,
just
my.
Bigger than the airplanes have.
Oh my, isn't that something?
Oh, fantastic ride.
Oh, wouldn't that be something?
And then the last 6 weeks we were over there, we went on our own to the Scandinavian countries.
So that's when you...
Then we went by boat ferry across the same channel and it took twice as long.
I guess so.
Then we toured Scandinavian countries.
Did you have any relatives left in Sweden?
Only short-tailed cousins.
Mm.
Second and third and fourth, so on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing.
It was nice to tour, but I think all in all, I can understand why they Scandinavians settled in America, because life is different over here. It's not congested, so to speak. More free.
Room to move around.
Yeah. There's some small countries, you know.
Yeah.
They're so small.
Yeah. Very. You know, nowadays, you know, a lot of these people make big money out of Calgary. They sell the package that you come in to Calgary, get a motorhome, and then you go to see the mountains and see British Columbia. But what the people don't know is how many miles it is.
Right.
Well, and even from Nova Scotia, now I've got relatives in Nova Scotia there, and they just can't get over the distance between places, and because, well, you can drive across the Nova Scotia in no time flat, but I think you're from, isn't it only from...
In just a few hours.
Only 80 miles, isn't it? That's the longest length of road or something?
Oh, yeah, probably.
Probably.
Well, I think it's only 80 miles.
Yeah. Well, I know my husband, when he came to Canada, he came from England, and he landed in Halifax, and then he went all across the prairies on the train to Vancouver, and he said, "You have," and of course he was saying this, what you're saying, "You have no idea until you travel how far, how big the country is." You know, no matter how many maps you look at.
Right.
Map doesn't mean. He says people in England, sure, they have maps and globes, and you can't visualize the distance.
Talked to one lady on our ferry trip when we were heading for the Scandinavian countries. And apparently, She had always wanted to go to Canada. So she married a soldier that was with the Canadian patrol over there. Because she was, because a Canadian, she was going to get to go to Canada. And what a disappointment, she said. He originally was from southern England, and she says, that's as far as we got when we got out of the army. Because she said he was just that he had joined up with the Canadian patrols over there, and she thought he was a Canadian, and she wanted to go to Canada, she married a Canadian.
Well, you'd think that they'd have a little conversation about this. Wouldn't be, must have been
they must. They would be people older than ourselves. And
she they couldn't
never
imagine.
Did get to Canada, and she always wanted to go to Canada. He says, you'd be satisfied to be where you are.
Oh, dear. Well, that's...
It was kind of cute. She was romantic. She
never made it. Well...
No. And she was so sure she was going to get to Canada because she was marrying a fellow from the Canadian Army.
And she never, she just never even asked because she figured, took for granted that he was a Canadian.
Right.
Never, probably never occurred to her to ask.
I guess that was just going to be her ticket to Canada.
Yeah, yeah.
Married,
never even
a soldier that was supposed to be a Canadian. Yes. And was in the Canadian Armed Forces there.
Never asked him, you see. Oh, isn't this interesting?
I think she must have been Dutch or something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, she said her mother was so disappointed she never got any further than southern England.